My name is Sheila Morrow. I was born on the 24th of May, 1947.
And how did you get into hockey in the first place?
Well, I think there was a kind of history of hockey in the family, in that my mother played hockey. My mother was evacuated up to North Wales to Bangor, in the war, where she met my father and they got married. And they were both fairly sporting people. Like, my father had an amateur Welsh soccer cap and at one point nearly turned professional. And my earliest memories on a Saturday are alternate Saturdays. My brother and I would go to football with my dad, who played semi-professional for Nantllevale. And then the other Saturday we'd go and watch my mother playing hockey for Bangor Ladies. So I kind of had a bit of a tradition of hockey in the family. And then we'd all get together in the evening and play badminton on a Saturday night. And in the summer we all played tennis together. So it was quite a sporting family.
And did Bangor have a junior?
No, they didn't. So I didn't actually play hockey until I went to school, or until I went to secondary school, which was Bangor Grammar School for Girls, where my first PE teacher was called Jennifer Gibson, and she used to play for Bangor Ladies with my mother. So I knew Jennifer, you know, as a kind of an auntie, as you do as a young child. But that she was only in the school for 2 years, and then she retired, and another teacher, Mrs. Williams, came in, and she really kind of set things going, really. So I played in school, and I played for the county, for Carnarvonshire, and I played for North Wales Schoolgirls, and they used to have a summer school at Lillishall, which a Welsh summer school at Lillishall, where juniors from South Wales and North Wales would go for a week's coaching. So we had all sorts of coaches, people like Marjorie Cadle and what was her name? Enid something? Can't remember now. We're going back quite a long time. But they were mainly quite well-known English coaches, but they would be called in alongside our coaches for a kind of summer school. So I suppose I kind of got seen there by various of the world. Because in those days, of course, you got selected. You know, there were no squad sessions or anything like that. It was pure selection. So I was then invited. I then went to college. I went to Iron Marsh PE College. And I played hockey there for the year team in the first year, etc. And in the first year, I was invited to go to North Wales Senior Trials. The two girls, myself and a girl, and another girl called Anne Evans, I think her name was, and the North Wales Trials were going to be in Wrexham, not far from Liverpool. We woke up on the Saturday of the trials. We were invited to the trials, but they clashed with a college fixture against one of our rival PE colleges in the Midlands, against Anstey. So we were refused permission to go to North Wales trials because college came first. So big disappointment. So North Wales decided to send a lady called Elsie Harris, who was of Welsh extraction and lived in the Liverpool area, to come and watch me play in a college match. So at the end of the match, I went along to speak to her, and she said, I didn't realise you were Sheila. She said, I was watching the centre half, and that was another girl altogether. But she said, but I did see you play quite well. So anyway, so out of that came, you know, my invitation to go to the trials. Couldn't go because of the college match. Woke up on the morning of the Saturday morning, and it was snowing. It had been snowing overnight. The college matches in Anstey were cancelled, so we rang at Wrexham. The trials were still on. So this other girl and I hitchhiked from Liverpool to Wrexham.
With your kit?
With our kit, to play in the North Wales trials. I got into the North Wales senior team that year, played against South Wales seniors. We probably lost, because we usually did, but got invited to Welsh trials, again at Lillishall, and I'm now talking 66, 67, and got invited to Welsh trials and got into the Welsh team. So it was all a kind of a bit of luck involved there along the way. That I got, so I selected for Wales. My first cap was against Ireland in 1967, down in a place called Risca in the Welsh Valleys. We lost the match, and because Wales had such a strong team and they didn't usually lose to Ireland, I thought it must be my fault. But I was selected for the next match. So I survived that season, and then the next season, one of the players had been pregnant, and that's why there was a vacancy in the team. She came back in, and I lost my place for the next year, but then I was back in the next year. So that must have been... And that was 67, because I was lucky that year that it was the IFWA conference in Germany. So that was... so, and I was selected in the squad, the team to go there. So not only had my first cap that year, I went to Germany to a world conference. And we used to have a saying in Wales that you didn't have a trial for Wales, you had an audition. And if you could sing, you got into the team. Because the highlight of the world championship in those days was National Night, where each country had to put on an item on the stage for all the other participating teams. And of course the Welsh always sang. So we used to have choir practice alongside our squad training sessions, which is, but we did have a very good choir, very good choir. So that was 1967. And then having lost my place the next year, 68, I then got back in 69 and was lucky enough to be continuous from there till I retired in 84. By which time I'd gone to IFWA in Germany, 71 in New Zealand, 75 in Edinburgh, which was the first kind of championship style where there was an actual winner, and Wales played England in the final, where we lost. And anecdotally, the captain of the England team was Anita White, who years later became my boss when I went to work for Sport England. And she's one of my close friends now, so we still stay in touch. So that was 75. I went to Vancouver in 79, and my final one was Kuala Lumpur in 83, after which I retired, because by then GB had been, well, women's hockey went into the Olympics in 1980. Okay, and so Great Britain started putting together the first Great Britain squad. So that started, I suppose, in 70, would have been 77 or 78. And at that time, we had a very strong Welsh team at that time. We had people like Anne Ellis, Shirley Ellis, Shirley Morgan, Marilyn Morgan, myself, a number of Welsh players, and we ended up with four of us in the squad that was selected to go to Moscow. But as you know, we were one of the few sports that boycotted Moscow, so we didn't go. After which Anne Ellis retired, Shirley retired. I can't remember if Marilyn did or not, but I certainly carried on playing for a couple more years. And became captain of the squad, of the GB team for a year and a half. And then we failed to qualify to go to 1984, when we knew in 83 that we had failed. And that year I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So, yeah. So that kind of set me back a little bit with radiotherapy and what have you. And once I knew that we'd failed to go, that we'd fail to qualify, I decided it was time to hang up my boots, my playing boots. And by that time, I had also qualified as an FIH umpire. So I went on for a few more years as an umpire. But I was a bit old to be starting it, because in those days, you know, the age limit, I was, 39 when I stopped playing, 38, 39. I was reaching the end of my umpiring career. So although I gained my grade one, I didn't really go to the highest heights. So I think I did the European A Clubs final. That was about the highest I went, apart from other, you know, home international matches.
But you must have been one of the older players in the squad at that age.
I was.
Playing at that level.
I was. I kept going for a long time. Couldn't get rid of me.
How many Wembleys did you play?
Three.
Three.
Mm. I think the first was 68 or 69. Was it 60? I think so. Then we played in... I certainly got a film of us in 81. I think that was the Queen's visit that year. And I did one other. Because the first one, I can remember Nan Thomas was playing for Wales. And it was all at that very early time when I was just in the Welsh squad and they had a very strong team. People like Dorry Arkell were playing. Anita was playing on the wing for England. What's her name now? Lived in Wimbledon. England... Oh, just one of the most famous England players.
Melvin
Hickey.
Melvin Hickey
was playing. Yeah, it was that era.
Yes.
You know? So that was my first match then, and then the second match there. I'm trying to think who was playing in those days. I can't really remember.
How did the sort of drama and theatre of playing at Wembley compare with things like IFWA conferences and...
Oh, in a way, completely different. It was obviously the largest crowd ever was at Wembley. Always. It was just enormous. And the noise when you walked out onto the Wembley pitch was quite frightening, particularly as they were all saying, England, England. And no matter how many parents we took with us, there was only this small group shouting for Wales. So that was actually quite daunting. But I suppose that I've always said that one of the highlights it must have been 81. Yeah, it was 81 when we played England and the Queen visited, because I was captain that year. So I got to introduce the Queen, my team, to the Queen, which was just fabulous. Just the most amazing day, you know. And we nearly drew. Apart from that wretched goal, that penalty stroke in the dying minutes. But yes, but the conferences were different, because even though they became more competitive after Edinburgh, 4 years later in Canada, we played England for the fourth, fifth playoff place and won. So that was quite good fun that year, because obviously... Because of the GB setup, we knew a lot of the England players very well, because we played alongside them in the GB team. And there was a lot of camaraderie there. You know, Jane Swinnerton was playing and various people like that. And Val was playing. So at the end of the match, this fourth, fifth playoff match, we decided to swap shirts on the field. Well, some of them swapped shirts. I didn't, because I never wore anything under my shirt when I played hockey. So I didn't swap mine. And then our manager said that we had to get our shirts back because we only had the one set. But, I mean, that was the kind of era that I was playing in, you know, where the hockey was really serious, but, of course, it was all on grass, or mainly on grass. It was really serious, but you were able to socialise and to really establish great friends across the world.
Do you think some of that's been lost?
Yes, I do. I do. And, you know, I'm sure the players get a lot of satisfaction from the quality of the hockey that they're playing, from the way that they play it. But I think they miss out on those relationships with the opposition. You know, we used to meet for a drink in the bar. I'll tell you a classic example. We played England in Cardiff. I can't remember what year it was. It doesn't really matter. But it happened to be on the same day as Wales were playing, it might have been England, I'm not sure which team it was, at rugby at the Arms Park. Now, across the road from the Arms Park is a hotel called the Angel, which is the headquarters for where all the rugby players stayed in those days. Across the road from the Angel is Cardiff Castle. So after the match, our dinner with England was at Cardiff Castle. But we had some of the girls were friendly with some of the rugby players who said, well, why don't you all come to the Angel after our dinner and after your dinner and socialise? And he said, well, you know, England's with, oh, bring them with you. So they were invited with their partners, because some of the husbands were there as well. So after our dinner in the castle, we all walked across the road, long dresses as it was in those days, into the Angel, to be met by Mervyn Thomas, who's Merv the Swerve, captain of Wales. Welcome, girls. What would you want to drink? You know, it was gin and tonic, whiskey, beer, whatever. Fine. About 20 minutes later, we were still waiting for these drinks to arrive, and we're just thinking about going to the bar to buy them. And he said, oh, come on, your table's ready. We go into the ballroom. There's a big table, or two tables, set for us. A bottle of gin, a bottle of everything we'd asked for was on the table. It was kind of highlighting the difference between the rugby setup,
yes,
and the hockey setup. But having said that, you'd never get that today.
No.
You wouldn't go out till the early hours, because probably they'd have another match on the Sunday,
yes,
or they're in, you know, strict training, they wouldn't be going out. But it was a classic example.
Yes.
I loved it.
So when you retired from playing,
yeah,
you then turned to coaching?
No, oh, then went into umpiring.
I
was umpiring. And then I decided that, although I was umpiring at a reasonably high standard, I honestly didn't like the way that the game was going in terms of, I was doing National League in England at the time. I was living, by this time I'd moved and was working in London, so I was actually umpiring National League. But I used to hate the fact that people appealed all the time, that they were trying to con the umpire, and I thought, I don't need this. I really wasn't enjoying the umpiring, and I'd also started to do officiating, because I moved to London in 91. And I'd been appointed as a judge to various events and things like that, and quite liked that side of things. I'd also been involved a lot in Wales on the administrative side. So I did everything from secretary of the county to, chairman of this and whatever. And I was on the Welsh Council. I represented Welsh hockey on the sports councils, development committee, all sorts of things like that. And I thought, I just don't need this every Saturday. You know, I'd rather do what I enjoy doing, which is the match officiating side of things. So I became a match delegate for the English National League when I was up in London. And I got a number of really very good appointments from the International Hockey Federation. I'm not quite sure how. I really don't. But I can remember having, opening up my email one day and getting this invitation to go and do, I think the first big one I did was an Olympic qualifier in New Zealand as a judge. But where on earth does this come from, you know? I had done a few European things by that time. And it kind of escalated from there. I went as a judge to various things, then I was a technical officer.
What does the role of judge entail?
The role of judge is, essentially, it's in charge of the timing and the scoring at a very basic level. So they're the ones at the table who, originally, before it was all electronic, you know, they filled in the forms and kept the time, noted the substitutions, because there weren't rolling subs when they started. And then you get appointed as a technical officer, and that's the person who basically is in charge of the control of the two benches and control of everything to do with that game. So there's a TO on duty at every match, and they're the ones that make sure that the coaches are behaving themselves, that the substitutions are done correctly, that you've got the right number of people on the benches, and that everything is running smoothly from that perspective. You also have to look at things like, if you're at an FIH event, you're only allowed to have certain advertising hoardings up. You can't have flags hiding the advertising. You've got to be sure of where the press are, where the photographers go. You've got to make sure that the players warming up have got bibs on, that they're not distracting what's going on. You've got to make sure that that there's a clear way for the umpires and that everybody behaves generally. And then you've got a tournament, well, it used to be the tournament director, they're now called technical delegates, who is responsible for the whole of the event. So that's everything from making, if there are problems with the team's accommodation or transport or meals, your job is to make sure that the local organisers sort it out. You, depending on the level of the event, you might be responsible for liaising with the local media. Although it's a major event like this one, you obviously have a media officer appointed. So, you know, the job's slightly different depending on the level of event you go to. So I got quite highly involved in that, and then was eventually lucky enough to go to realise my ambition to go to the Olympics, and I was appointed to Beijing as a judge, and then I was appointed to London as a judge. So I was, that kind of completed the circle for me. I was delighted with those two appointments.
How did it feel going to the Olympics?
Oh, wonderful, just what I thought it was going to be.
And although you weren't playing, did you feel part of it?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Because, well, to be honest, we're not in the Olympic Village. The technical officials are slightly separate, but I think we do better because we're in a nice hotel. and we can get to see other events and other competitions. You kind of share what you have. You have your accreditation, and then they have a go-anywhere pass, but you only get two for the team of officials. So you kind of work out who wants to go where, who wants it on what day. And then the same applied in London. So that was lovely to finish off in that. Well, it didn't actually finish off. Those are two highlights, and then my final one was I was actually appointed as the competition director for the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. So that was kind of my highest TD appointment, I suppose, as the overall in charge, which was lovely because the Commonwealth Games are always called the friendly games, and they are, because you haven't got language problems, you haven't got some of the more contentious teams there, you know, and it's lovely. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Yeah, it was a lovely event. It really was, and it ran smoothly. And it was, apart from the rain on the last day,
yes.
Which is not too good.
And you said that was your final event.
My final major. Well, that's the biggest one I've had to date.
So you're still on the.
I'm still on the FIH list. Yeah, there are. I think at the moment there are three what they call level one officials in Europe, and I'm one of those three for women, yeah, which is great. So
is it still quite separate? So the women do the women's events and the men do the men's events, or
they do at the major levels. But for example, next weekend I'm doing the European under 16 hockey fives Future Heroes Cup. Okay, this is in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and I've got seven boys teams and six girls teams. So I'm the tournament director for the whole tournament, and I have a female TO, technical officer, and a male one, and the judges will work across all of them. And at the moment, we think the umpires will also umpire across both tournaments because they've all dropped out. I'm supposed to have seven female umpires. At the moment, I've only got three. Yeah. But I've got a lot of the Eastern European teams, and their umpires have just withdrawn from the events. But this is the first time that Europe has played in the fives, hockey fives. Next year, there will be a European Championship under 16. It's replacing what used to be the under 16 Championship. And the winner of next year's event will represent, will automatically qualify for the Youth Olympics the following year. But because Europe's not done it before, this year is trying to rank the countries that have entered the tournament. Because in order to get the top eight to play in next year's A division, or whatever you want to call it, we have to somehow rank them this year. So there are three tournaments around. One's in Vilnius, one's in Czech Republic, and there's a third one somewhere, not quite sure where. And we've each got a different number of teams playing, and they were sorted on a geographic basis. And then we have to come up with a formula to rank, depending on where these teams finish in each of their three tournaments. We have to put those rankings together and rank the top eight. So that's going to be a bit of a challenge next week.
Surprised you've got time to be here.
Well.
And in between that, you've done some coaching.
No, I don't coach.
What were you doing the other day then? The presentation?
Okay, what was I doing the other day? I was on... I was put forward by the European Hockey Federation onto the FIH Academy Educators course. These are the people who will go out and run courses under the Academy banner. And the group that met last week were, some were coaches, some were umpires, and some were officials, technical officials. So we were all together because the kind of theory of education is going to be the same across all three. But of course, some of the things that we had to, the practical sessions, say I was working with you as a partner, you would decide that you were going to teach, I don't know, the right-hand dodge or something, and I would decide I was going to do a presentation on checking sticks. So I'd explain to you what I was going to do in my 10-minute presentation and vice versa. And then they decided at the last minute that we would deliver each other's prepared bit. So I ended up having to deliver a session to our group of five on the reverse aerial elimination dodge. I said, what? But it was basically kind of pull across, reverse stick, lift it over to this side to get round somebody. But it wasn't about me, it was about the person then who was assessing my abilities as a coach, and it was that person who was being assessed or being looked at for the way in which they presented that feedback. So that was what I was doing. So although it looked like a coaching course, it wasn't. Now, I trained as a PE teacher, so I taught for some 17 years. And then when I went into the Sports Council, I decided I'd had enough of teaching and the coaching side. And that's when I went into umpiring rather than coaching. And I've really never had a desire to be a coach.
So while you've been doing all the umpiring and the technical lines, you've been working for Sporting
Club? I was.
You were for what?
I worked for... I left teaching in 84 and went to work for the Sports Council for Wales, as it was in those days, Sport Wales now. And I was with them for 8 years. And then I applied for and got a job with what was then the Sports Council, which was both GB and England, working in London. So I came up to London, I worked here for 13 years. And then the Sports Council split into Sport England and UK Sport. And I applied for and got a promotion within Sport England. So I ended up as head of governing body services there, which is providing... grant aid and services to all the national governing bodies of sport. So I had 9 years with Sport England, and then I retired. So when I retired, I went back to Wales.
And now you've retired?
Yes.
But you're still on the list for FIH?
Yes.
And you still watch hockey?
I watch hockey, yes. I'm not the world's biggest watching hockey fan. I don't travel the world watching because I've now taken up golf. So my Saturdays are taken up because that's our competition day. So I don't watch hockey on a Saturday because I'm playing golf. But obviously, you know, when Wales is playing and it's just when there's a good tournament going on, I do that. but I'm also on the board of England Hockey. No, I'm not. I'm on the board of Welsh Hockey.
Right.
Yes, I'm on the board of Hockey Wales. And I'm their representative on the GB board. Each of the home nations, England, Scotland and Wales, has a an elected director and the chief exec on the GB board. So I'm Wales's elected director on there. And I've been on there for about 4 years now, I think. So that's why I come up here, because in my capacity as a GB board member, to support GB.
You said you didn't like umpiring because of the way hockey had changed and the way players were taking it more seriously and wanting to appeal decisions. How would you like to play under the current rules?
Oh, I think I'd like to play under them. Yes, I would. I think the game's changed considerably, and but I said this to somebody the other day, you know, that we were nowhere near as fit and as strong as these girls are, or as skillful, I'll be honest, as they are today. But as that person said to me, yes, but if you were starting your career as a youngster now, this would be the norm for you. And, you know, this is what you would do. So there are big differences. I love the game today. I think it's so fast and so skillful, and of course you've got this lovely surface to play on. I played my last few years on AstroTurf, but you know, so fast, and I loved it. I love it because I was always a quick player. I was a defender, but I was quick, so this always suited me, as long as I didn't have to run too far. I'm not a distance runner ever.
Over the years, you've done a lot of travelling, you've met a lot of people, still are. And what about the friendships you've made during
hockey? Oh, unbelievable. I mean, it starts off that, okay, if I take you back to when I was playing for North Wales Schoolgirls, the annual match against South Wales Schoolgirls was played alternatively in South Wales and North Wales. And in those days, we used to host the opposition. Yes. So when I played for North Wales first, came down to South Wales, was billeted with a girl called Pam Jones. Pam is still my best friend. Okay? So she and I, I stayed in her house. Then we went to the summer schools together. When I moved from Liverpool down to Cardiff to teach, because I was playing so much hockey down that way, Pam and I, with Shirley Morgan and another girl called Linda Owen at the time, the four of us went into a flat together. We all played for Wales. We travelled off to matches together. We played for the same club, the same county, for South Wales and for Wales. So we spent every Saturday together playing. So they're still my oldest hockey friends. They all now play golf. Okay? So the four of us frequently play golf together now. We go to each other's open days. And then other people now are around the world. Wherever I go, I seem to find people. I said I went to New Zealand in 2004, it would have been. 2004? Yeah. To the Olympic qualifier there. The person who picked me up at the airport was called Corinne Pritchard. She was an umpire for New Zealand, and she umpired me when I played. So we reminisced about that. We got to the ground, and I was introduced to some of the volunteers that were there. The ground manager was Pat Barham, who played for New Zealand at the time that I was playing, and she now coaches out there, and she was in charge of all the field. And she said, "Oh," she said, "the Silver Ferns have got a reunion. They've got a special reunion going on. Come along and join in." So I went along, and I met half a dozen people that I played against who'd come over to Wales. And after the match, we'd all gone into Cardiff Athletic, because the match was played on the Glamorgan Cricket Ground, which was the home of Cardiff Hockey Club. Yes. in the winter. And their clubhouse was next to the Arms Park in town. We all went back there after the match. After we'd had our dinner, we went back there. There was a male voice choir in there. There was the New Zealand team with their guitar and their poise. And there were the Welsh girls. So what kind of night did we have? We sang. We had a super night. And a lot of those people were in this reception in Auckland when I went there. And we started singing some of the old songs. It was wonderful. So that's the kind of thing that hockey can do for you. Well, it did in my day anyway.
And you think that the current generation are not going to really repeat that experience?
I think they know each other. I think they certainly respect players from the other team. But that I don't think they have the opportunity to develop those close friendships, you know, to be able to keep in touch with them. Which is quite sad, if you think about it. Everything mitigates against it, because things like in our day, even club hockey, you know, your pitch was at the club and you all went into the bar afterwards. So you had an opportunity there. Now, because of the AstroTurfs, very few clubs, certainly in Wales, have their own pitches. So they have to go somewhere else. They play at all times during a Saturday. They're not going to wait around till the evening to go. I mean, when I was playing for Penarth, which was my club all the time I played, we had very close links with Cardiff, the men's Cardiff club. And I think three of our team, if not four, married men who played for Cardiff. And because I lived in Cardiff, we used to come back to the Cardiff club on a Saturday night. All my Saturdays were spent there. I know.
Yeah. It's been a great delight to talk to you, Sheila.
Oh,
thank
good.
You very much indeed for recounting your varied and fascinating history.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome.